Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's a football.
If you don't know football, you shouldn't be with a microphone in your hand.
Hello and welcome to Soccer Sense, the sensible football podcast where we are jostling for position among hundreds of other people under their goalpost to try and get that header of sense to be guided into the goal of hot takes in the world of football. This is Tariq joining you along with Vishal.
Hello, guys.
And of course, Karan from the City of London.
Hello, everybody.
All right, gentlemen, we have had an absolutely outstanding Champions League night. I think we had our skepticism about this format, but safe to say, events like things that transpired yesterday have kind of turned us around on this format, not least because everybody loves chaos and drama in football. And if you throw in a helping of Jose Mourinho and a little bit of Real Madrid Schadenfreude, I think it just makes for an almost perfect night of Champions League football. Not to forget the absolute garnishing and icing on the cake of a goalkeeper scoring a goal. We will, of course, deal with all of that with our European correspondent, that is Karan. Karan, quick thoughts on the Champions League group phase, because I think we had a couple of very interesting breakout stories. Bodo Glimt, we talked about them when they qualified last season. I remember we did an entire primer episode on this. They had to win both their last two games, and they managed to do it against Manchester City and Atletico Madrid, of all people. And of course, the story of the fact that Benfica, with that great win against Real Madrid, with their goalie scoring in the 98th minute, a Jose Mourinho team putting it past Real Madrid. I think he had not beaten Real Madrid since leaving Real Madrid, if I remember correctly. So
he managed to beat them quite a few times when he was managing them.
So there was that. And of course, Manchester City also needed some last minute heroics to get through. They needed to win that last game. Club Brugge making it through. And of course, we had Arsenal making it through with a 100% record. So quick thoughts on that before we move on to the other stuff on this part.
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, we definitely were quite skeptical about this new format that they wanted to introduce. I mean, to be honest, we still are to some extent. But yeah, in all this chaos, there was quite a bit of excitement as well. So there's no doubts about it. Like you mentioned, Bodo Glimt, I mean, a team that over the last, two, three seasons have really been impressive. We joked after their win over Manchester City that they led City for much longer than how much sunlight they've had. So... and as impressive as the result was, again, following that up with a win away at Atletico was definitely something special. I mean, doing it at home, especially they have the advantage of, you know, the geography for sure. Not that it's easy, but still they managed to kind of pull that off against City. But to do it away at Atletico, it's definitely an impressive, impressive result. And coming back to Jose Mourinho and Benfica, I think that was a very, very impressive header. I mean, a lot of strikers and old school goal poachers would have been proud of that header, let's be honest. Uh-huh. And it was just absolutely romantic stuff. There's no doubts about it. And looking at Jose Mourinho's celebration on the sideline reminded me all those years back when he was celebrating on the sidelines when Porto scored that last minute goal against United. I mean, that's when he came to prominence, right? So there was a lot of similarities in the celebrations. And I think he managed to even celebrate with the ball boy during the commotion. So yeah, it was definitely one of those, one of the more exciting games for sure. Having said that, And the icing on the cake was definitely Napoli getting knocked out, no doubts about
Of course, Chelsea beating
it.
them there, and well, in classic Napoli fashion, unfortunately, a couple of fan clashes also out there. But these are what classic European nights are about. I think the top of the table is fairly straightforward. We had in the top five, even top six, actually, teams. It's Arsenal, Bayern, Barca, Liverpool, teams like that. Among them, a huge collection of European trophies, and Tottenham Hotspur.
The fact that Sporting Lisbon are getting more love than Tottenham says it all.
Hey, that's
But of
just
course,
magic.
it leads to a very interesting second phase, and we'll talk about that second phase when the draw happens, because it would be pointless to speculate right now. But the only other thing the entire football universe is hoping for is that Benfica draw Real Madrid again, which is a possibility, by the way, because that defeat actually pushed Real Madrid onto the ninth spot, and Manchester City got a free pass into the round of 16. Which was an interesting.
It's like getting bumped up to business class because they screwed up your seats.
So all of those teams will be in there for those knockout rounds, and we'll talk about that perhaps later. But again, with 8 games for each team, and for us to identify 24, there are always going to be fine margins, and the fact that the fine margins were across so many teams at once was probably why it feels like a very memorable night. I was telling Vishal before the night kicked off that my plan was to watch 5 minutes of every game. Incidentally, the Real Madrid game was not the one I chose or had picked to watch the last 5 minutes of. Hindsight, that should have been the one. Not just the last 5 minutes, but the last maybe about 15, because a lot happened in those minutes, Vishal, including a Rodrigo red card. But speaking of the Champions League, or pivoting away from the Champions League, we pivot away to a team who are not there this time. Might be the next time around. But it's very important that we speak of this team, because a lot has happened since we last recorded our podcast, which was about said team firing their previous manager. We are talking, of course, about Manchester United. So welcome to your time to shine on the show, resident Red Devil Vishal.
Firstly, current unnecessary call out for United losing to Porto back in the day.
Well, they did manage to kind of turn things around a few years later. So, let's see how it goes.
So let's get to that that week, 10 days, well, a couple of weeks for Manchester United, Vishal. It's been interesting, but obviously people have again landed on all sides of the reactions, and our job here is to bring everybody back to the sensible plane on this. Two great win, of course. Michael Carrick taking over as caretaker manager. The first thing it does is absolutely annihilate City, and I want to talk to you about the tactics and the sense of that one. And then, of course, you also want to talk about the fact that they went to the Emirates and managed to break that hoodoo, which had been around for a long time, of beating Arsenal at the Emirates. And in the process, also throwing the Premier League title race wide open again. All of that in the duration of just 2 weeks in classic Manchester United style. So let's go back to that Manchester derby. I know it's late in the piece, but we've had enough perspective. How is Michael Carrick doing anything different with this same lot that Ruben Amorim was dealing with? Or is it the same thing, or is it the new manager bounce? How do we look at this?
See, it's a fact, multiple things, right? There definitely is a new manager bounce and all that. But if you were to really break it down to its simplest form, it is simple, right? He's basically taken a group of players, put them in the positions they play best, right? Comes down to that. He's playing the left, he's playing Luke Shaw in the right position. He's given Dorgu who's not necessarily great at defense, but good at going forward, maybe playing up front. Bruno actually playing the playmaker and not being asked to do everything on the field. Kobe Mainoo picking up a lot of the all great midfields have somebody facilitating and somebody executing, right? And that's really what that's really all he's done. He's basically taken the players, a group of players. We all know these players are not duds, right? He's basically just playing them to their strengths. And I think we've discussed this multiple times. Football is a simple game. Because if you look at what he's not done it tactically, he's not changed the world, right? He's basically saying they are expecting us to do many things. We will play simple football. We will play one-touch football. We will have quick movement. And when the time comes, we will hit them on the counter. So straightforward football, easy football, simple football, and effective in all sense, shapes and forms. Because if you look at Arsenal, and we'll come there, I know. But again, Arteta complicated the whole process. Pep Guardiola complicated the whole process. And the result was that they didn't expect United to really just play simple, straightforward football.
So yeah, a couple of things about both those games, Vishal, particularly in the Manchester City game, because that's the one at least I watched in full. The Arsenal game I did not watch in entirety. But in that Manchester City game, United kept winning balls in midfield. City seemed to be very disjointed, giving up possession often, very unlike a Pep Guardiola team. Because like you said, they're probably trying too many different routes, too many complications, whereas United just went, injected some pace on the wings and then decided we're going to take some shots. Which brings me to the Arsenal game. And if we could break the Arsenal game down a little, because one way of looking at it would be that United were also blessed with two absolutely outstanding strikes. And sometimes, obviously, in a game like football where Arsenal miss their opportunities as well, the margins are too thin that if a goal goes in and if it's a wonder strike like Dorgu's or for that matter, the one that followed it, there is nothing much a team can do. But can Arsenal acquit themselves honorably from this, or were they just outthought and outplayed by United?
No, absolutely not, right? Like, yes, the strikes were definitely otherworldly, right? Like 9 out of 10 times those don't go in. But I think what Arsenal need to sit back and look at is the build-up to both those goals, right? Same mistakes. If Man United are moving the ball, one touch, quick passes, quick movement, that means you need to start closing them down a lot more and give them lesser space and lesser time. On both goals, same mistake, right? The movement was there. For example, the Dorgu goal, the final pass that made it to him before he hit the volley shouldn't have happened. And like you can sit down and say, yes, the strikes were otherworldly, but the build-up to the goal was amateur from Arsenal. And that also showed their larger approach to the game, right? Arsenal didn't really step out in that game to win this game. Like if you are Arsenal, and we've discussed this about Arsenal having this problem in this season, right? There are some games you must go out to make a statement as if you're going to be a champion or if you want to be champion. And again, here they very clearly came out to win this on set piece. They tried to crowd on set piece and they tried to win that game. And when the first goal came, they sat back. And sitting back against a team that is high on emotion, high on confidence, and letting them play their style of football is falling into the trap, right? Because if United aren't making those two audacious attempts in one game, it also means they believe that Arsenal are giving them the space and time to do this.
Yeah, in both, I think you could say that Dorgu had a couple of great touches to set himself up and then take that shot. But there was space afforded to him to go and take it. And these are highly technical players who would not necessarily shank everything into Rosie. Which brings us to kind of the path forward for both these teams here. Interesting positions both of them find themselves in. Manchester United obviously realized that this could be a little bit of a mini turnaround in the making. It naturally has huge implications for the club in terms of pushing for a top four finish. So where does Michael Carrick go from here for the rest of the season, or how does he set up for the rest of the season? And follow-up question to both you and Karan as well, because Karan at least physically is much more closer to the action than we are. Which is what happens in North London with Arsenal trying to protect that 4-point lead, which they currently have in the league.
Yeah. So starting with, I think Carrick is very clear about what the expectation from him is, right? I don't think he's thinking too far forward. He's very clear that Champions League and European football is critical for to attract players from a business lens, and all possible importance is given to that. I think he's going to work towards that. Yeah, does he have the right set of players to achieve it? Most likely. Them staying fit is going to be another challenge because Dorgu is now just been ruled out for 10 weeks, for example. So therefore, the depth of the squad is going to be critical. But I think he's going to take it one game at a time. I don't think he's going to tinker around. He's going to overdo or overcomplicate it. He's not that individual as a player. He was not that individual when he was manager of Middlesbrough. He was not that individual. I don't think he's going to start now at Manchester United because he's start manager of Manchester United. So I don't see that changing. I think he will succeed in finishing in the top five, top six, because also, let's be honest, the other teams are not consistent enough to take advantage of slip-ups or misses. So that definitely is something that I think he will succeed in. On the Arsenal front, I think it's a tricky time because Arsenal have dropped 6 points, one against Liverpool, one against United, which should have been, honestly, 6 points they took home, both at home. And it might come, like you do not want to give City the smell of blood, right? Like they are going to come at you. And I think there is going to be more pressure on them to deliver now. And I saw a very interesting stat, which is glaring, right? Arsenal don't feature in the top five goal scorers anywhere. That's a scary stat considering you spend significant amount of money strengthening their forward. Then yes, it's a great thing that you have multiple goal scorers, but again, lots to really sit back and think about because you are becoming a one-trick pony, and that might not be the best way to go forward to close out the title.
Yeah, so going to you, Karan, on this, and we close out on this point, which is that for Arteta now, especially with these many games to go, and 4 points is not as big a lead, particularly because I think they still have to play Manchester City again. The other interesting bit is that when the Manchester Derby happened and United won it that comprehensively, it looked like this should be game over for the title race and Arsenal should be cruising, only for Arsenal to stumble there. So do you see this becoming a pattern, or do you think the breakout of it, it's just a run of games that they can get out of?
No, I think it's been an issue with Arsenal this season where on a couple of occasions they had the opportunity to build up a sizable lead, but on both those occasions they kind of messed it up, wherein what could have been at any given point of time a 7-8 point lead has now kind of dwindled down to four. And like you said, it goes down to that critical game against Manchester City, who themselves haven't been the most consistent, let's face it. But like Vishal said, you cannot afford to give any inch for a team like City because they just know how to kind of pull teams back and get over the line. Arsenal, on the other hand, the problem for them is they haven't been here before. So it's new territory for them. And we can actually see it in the way the fans are reacting. There are a few Arsenal fans in my office, and even in the pub where I was watching the game, you could just sense the nervousness that the Arsenal fans are kind of portraying at this point of time. While everybody is excited that they're top of the table, there is still that certain amount of trepidation that they haven't been able to extend that lead on multiple occasions when they had that opportunity.
Right, and we will see if that is of any consequence as we move towards the so-called business end of the season, or as cricket commentator Ronak Kapoor put it very nicely in one of the WPL games the other day, the pointy end of the season. And Arsenal definitely will be feeling the sharpness of that pointy end. And we will be there to bring to you whatever happens on those coming weeks. But for now, this is all the time we have for these mega episodes where we talked about 20 odd games spanning the Champions League and the Premier League. And we'll continue to do that, trying to separate the sense from the rest of the noise. So for this episode, this is Tariq signing off along with Karan from the City of London.
See you guys.
And Vishal.
See you guys.
The prayers continue for United.
Amen.